Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. We make it easy for you to enhance your outdoor living space with the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block ready to take home today. Build a fire pit or retaining wall with our tumbled Belgian wall blocks. On sale now. Save big on your landscaping project at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heat, and Cooling and Electrical Game Studio, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Kevin Ingram, voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores, will join us in 30 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on the Vandy-Tennessee baseball matchup this weekend. But by this time next week, we will be reacting to the Titans draft. We will be reacting to what the Titans did in round one. And tell me if you guys think differently. Mm-hmm. I think of this year's draft, I have more anticipation, not necessarily anxiety, but anticipation about this draft than I have felt in a long, long time. And I don't know if it's because the Titans are such a question mark with Brandon Carthon, what they could do in the first round. I don't know if it's because the quarterbacks are so intriguing and they have so many question marks surrounding them, but there is so much talent. I don't know what it is, but I'm anticipating this draft more so than I have in a draft in a long time.
Well, I was anticipating this whole offseason because I've said that I thought this was the most important moving forward. This was the most important offseason for the Tennessee Titans to date, at least for me, because of the changing of the GM, because the quarterback situation and where this team is at, new stadium, just the whole makeup of this franchise at this particular time, because now they're sort of phasing out the older guys. It's almost like just the NFL goes in its five, six year cycle where they get their veteran guys and they try to ride them, especially good organizations, ride them as long as they can. And then the good ones find a way to sort of transition out of the older guys more gradually or more seamlessly, and you really don't see it, i.e. Pittsburgh, New England at one point, teams that win all the time.
So Green Bay.
So I look at the Titans, I always was, this offseason to me was always going to be exciting because of where this team has found themselves with GMs, the roster, period, new stadium.
And I think it's so interesting and intriguing, specifically for the Titans, for me, because as we get closer to the draft, we start to pick up on little breadcrumbs that lead us to where we think teams are going to go. I think now more than ever, it seems more clear that the Panthers are leaning toward Bryce Young. Maybe it's totally a smokescreen. You never know until draft night. But at least where it stands now, I can kind of confidently say that I think, my opinion, is that the Panthers will take Bryce Young. Mm-hmm. Haven't really picked up on any of that from the Tennessee Titans until I heard Diana Russini on Get Up yesterday. Now, Diana Russini is somebody who always gets Titans information. She seems like a Titans insider.
She has a track record.
She has a track record
when
of
she
knowing
speaks
stuff.
On something on the Titans, I'm paying attention.
Yes,
that's
exactly
know me.
How
I
feel.
I'm always quick to question when we play these sound clips. Where did they get that? Is it pure speculation, or have they talked to somebody? With Russini, I always feel like, with her track record, she has talked to somebody.
She knows. She's got the inside scoop on what's going on with the Tennessee Titans. And this is what Diana Russini had to say yesterday.
Todd, I don't get the sense that the Tennessee Titans would be willing to move all the way up to 3-4 quarterback.
Right.
But I know that they are in the business of perhaps getting one.
Okay. So when Diana Russini says something about the Titans, mm-hmm. we listen. She says that the Titans aren't really interested in moving up to 3. They're still interested in a quarterback. What do we make of it?
I like that strategy. I have been on the record as saying I am not for trading up in general, but especially for what we know about the volatility, what appears for these quarterbacks, is to me is just too much risk to give up future assets to move up. If though, the guy that you like is there at 11, then I'm all for it. If your scouts, if your data, if everything you evaluation with your evaluation says take that guy, then do it.
The front end.
I always like wrong button, D Mace. I would even consider trading down.
<Wrong button. laughs>
I love the trading down thing. But yeah, quarterback, no question. But I'm not trading up to do it.
I want to, Nick, play that again, what Donna Russini said.
Todd, I don't get the sense that the Tennessee Titans would be willing to move all the way up to three.
It was something that she said right subsequently right after that.
For yeah. quarterback, right. But I know that they are in the business of perhaps getting one.
There we go.
Yeah.
Perhaps getting one. They're in the business
of
perhaps
getting one. So if it falls to you.
But isn't that what we've been saying? Like, they need a quarterback. They're going to eventually need a quarterback. So my thing is, she, as plugged in as we believe she is, and I think she is plugged in along with TD and Jim Wyatt, but she's not telling us anything that we don't know.
She's telling us that they may not be interested in trading
and moving up. And I don't think I think I've been the only one that said it. Listen, if you believe that guy that you love is there and you think someone else is going to get him,
you have to trade up to go get him.
Get him. Do what you, if y'all, everybody believes that he's the guy for our franchise, then you get him. Other than that, if you don't believe that guy, let him fall to you. You know, but if you think he's the guy, go get him because you don't want nobody else to get him. So I don't think it's earth-shattering news that we're hearing. It's good from the respect of, okay, we know she's plugged into the Titans. Mm-hmm. However it is, she's plugged in. So she's the information she's given us sort of go along with what we're thinking anyway. So, okay, I can see that. I understand what she's saying. She's not saying it's a definite, but she's saying, hey, listen, they're in the market for a quarterback. Well, duh.
But not moving up to three tells
yeah,
me
but not
one
moving,
thing.
Yeah.
They're not interested in Bryce Young. Mm-hmm. They're not interested in C.J. Stroud. And they're probably not interested in Anthony Richardson. Because do we all agree Anthony Richardson likely won't fall to 11?
Probably not. But
he may.
He might.
That's the way right. You don't ever know how it's going
to
happen.
But if they loved him, they'd move up to go get him to ensure that they could get their guy.
I just don't like moving up. I'm not moving up no matter what. That's
me. She said they are not moving. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think I heard this.
Play it again, Nick.
Yeah, I think I heard this. Go ahead.
For a quarterback, but I know that they are in the business of perhaps getting him.
Not moving up to number three.
Yes, not moving up to number three. But they can move up to four.
Nine.
Eight?
She didn't say that they're not interested in moving up.
Exactly.
Just not three. Five could be in play with Seattle.
Because I think for them, three is trying to move up that far. Say if it's number two because Houston don't want to draft a quarterback and they're trying to move back. I think that they believe possibly that's too rich for them. Like that second spot is too rich for them. And we're not going to, especially to a conference rival or division rival, I'm not going to give you all these picks, Houston, just to get the quarterback. Maybe if it was Detroit or Philadelphia. No, I wouldn't do it with Philadelphia again either.
Number three.
I wouldn't do it with Philadelphia. But some other team that's not so closely tied to us, we'll probably do it. But no, we're not doing it with Houston.
Another thing I do have to think about, though, is what do we always say whenever information gets out? It's because they want it to get out.
Yes,
sure. But
Why do the Titans want this out?
That's why I'm trying to be as consistent as I can with my thought is there's different philosophies, right? Some people like, look, I got this guy. Mm-hmm. I want this guy. And if I got to trade up, I got to trade back, I'm going to end up with this guy. My philosophy is let the draft come to you. Be okay with it if it goes any number of ways. Have your board and stick to that board. I don't think it's a good philosophy, especially this year, to come in and say, I've got to have a quarterback with my first pick. I don't sense that that's where the Titans are. Also, because they have a quarterback. They have Ryan Tannehill. They don't have to have a quarterback this year. They don't have to. So it all depends
unless
on how
they
much
they have to have it.
Willie.
It depends on how much you like these guys.
Willie.
Not a quarterback. It's like when you go to the grocery store, if I have to have oranges and I go to the fruit section and the oranges are all awful, if I got to have oranges, I guess I got to go with the best orange I can find in there. If
oranges.
I go in there and I like oranges, I'd like to get oranges, but the oranges aren't on sale and they're bad, I'll pass.
But
and I'll go get apples. No. I'll go get grapes. I'll go get other stuff.
You won't. You just go to another store and get the oranges.
This is the only store I've got. College football. The college football store.
You got a point there.
Yeah. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get a full Stanley Cup playoff breakdown from Willie D coming up next. It's Caroline, Willie D Mays, and join Robbie Stanley from 10 a.m. to noon tomorrow for another Kubota field event at the Coleman Tractor in White House for their biggest sales event of the year. Demo Kubota tractors, zero-turn mowers, and more. That's Coleman Tractor of White House, located at 3613 Highway 31 West, this Saturday, 1025, 1063 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, do not miss Nashville's best NFL draft coverage on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Join Jared Stillman, Derek Mason, and Chris Sanders as they broadcast live from Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, home of the 29-degree beer, on Thursday, April 27th. Willie D, we've got some pivotal games in the Stanley Cup playoffs coming up this weekend. Had a couple last night as well. What is the latest?
Well, it's been a lot of fun. Last night, a couple of teams that lost game one at home came up big with a had-to-have-it kind of performance. How about the Colorado Avalanche? Lost the first game to Seattle, down 2-0 in the second period in game two at home. Seattle, you're like if you're a Kraken fan going like, hey, I'm new to this. We're beating the defending champions again. This is easy, man. We got this.
If I'm a Seattle fan,
this is easier than I thought.
I'm thinking, who's saying this Stanley Cup trophy is that hard to win?
Yeah, because it's a breeze, man.
Easy for us.
This is a breeze.
Yeah.
And then Colorado got it cranking. It wasn't easy, though. I mean, they scored a couple in the second, boom, boom. And now you're thinking, okay, here comes the haymaker. Mm-hmm. But Seattle stayed in the game all the way to the end, and it took a lot for Colorado to win. Seattle's depth, this is how Vegas was really good in their first couple years. When you pick the whatever it is, the eighth best skater on every team, you come up with a lot of good players. You don't have a lot of superstars, but you get a lot of good players, and that's what Seattle's strength is depth. Their question has been goaltending, and it's interesting. Their goalie is Philip Grubauer, who the Avalanche cast off a couple years ago because he didn't play well in the playoffs. So now he's got a chance to play against his former team. It's really interesting theater here. Now Seattle got what they needed. They got a split. They're going back to Seattle. First ever playoff experience in a raucous environment. So Colorado's going to have to work for this a little bit.
Willie, what does – because we've seen analytics when it comes to, NFL. If you win this game – at this particular junction, or if you get home field advantage throughout the playoffs, your odds of winning goes up because you got to play. Everyone else has to play an extra game. In basketball, if you win the first game, then if you're the road team, then your chance of going up, winning the series goes up or goes down. How is it in hockey?
I think it's about the same. Okay. If you look, if you win game one, if you win game three when it's tied 1-1, your odds go way up. The probability goes up. It's not that different in hockey, I don't think. I would say there's a little less home ice advantage in hockey than there is in the NBA, in basketball. Definitely college basketball, I think, is the biggest home court advantage sport that there is. I remember back in the day in the NBA, it was really tough to win on the road. It was very, very tough in the playoffs to win on the road. I think it's not quite as tough now as it used to be. There's more parity than there was. But I do think it'll be interesting. Those environments in the NHL playoffs are amazing, and they will be in Winnipeg, who got their split on the road against Vegas. Vegas came up with a clutch win, tie game in the third period, could have gone either way, in danger of going down 2-0. They pulled it out. Toronto exorcise the demons last night.
Toronto fans can breathe a sigh, just the tiniest sigh of relief, because the series is tied now. But they did to Tampa Bay what Tampa Bay did to them and set all of Toronto ablaze.
You think Elliot Friedman feels better today?
I think his friends aren't wearing him out. Like, exactly. like he said, my friends are just being mean. Yesterday, he's like, they're like being mad. They're not just joking with me. They're mad at me. But they
pent up anger.
They look like the better team. Like before the series, a lot of the talk was from Toronto people was like, man, this is scary. It really looks like they should beat Tampa. They're just better than Tampa. They're deeper than Tampa. Well, that's what it looked like last night, especially with Tampa not having Victor Hedman and Eric Chernak. That's like the Predators going into a game without Roman Josi and Ryan McDonagh. Like that's two huge pieces. And speaking of Ryan McDonagh, Tampa no longer has Ryan McDonagh, who's been a strength for this Tampa team on those long journeys in the playoffs. So their depth already was a little bit suspect. So this is looking okay for Toronto, despite the nightmare in the first game. Maybe it made him stronger. Who knows, right? Sometimes you go through the fire. Like I was listening to a good interview with Mark Messier yesterday. He says, when you have to win four rounds, four best of seven, somewhere along the line, you're going to have struggles.
Right.
You're going to have adversity. Mm-hmm. So why not get it out of the way in the first game?
And that's kind of what Elliot was saying, that since the playoffs versus regular season, the style of play is so different. He said sometimes it takes guys, even veterans, sometimes it takes one game for them to remember, oh, yeah, like the playoffs, it's a completely different level. It's so much more physical. It is so much more tough. So sometimes it does take a game or two or three to get settled in and to get into the series and keep yourself in the series.
What series are you surprised by?
I think I'm definitely most surprised by the Kraken and the way they're not looking at all overmatched by the Avalanche. The Avalanche, when you don't quite have the depth, you know, the salary cap starts picking away at some of your players. When you have these, you know, juggernauts like Tampa and Colorado had, it's not quite the same when you don't have Nazem Kadri and Andrei Burakovsky and some of that second wave. They've still got the superstars. But they look – Cale Makar missed a lot of time down the stretch. He doesn't look like he's in gear yet. So that's something I think the Avs are going to need, is they need him to play like the superstar. McKinnon's there. Like, McKinnon is all over the place, tough to contain. But they need some other guys, those complementary players, to chip in. The team that really looks deep and really tough in all areas right now is the Rangers. They have easily beaten – the Devils in both games in New Jersey. Of course, a lot of the Ranger fans kind of seeped in there. They kind of went across the border into Jersey and kind of took over. Eli Manning was funny. I don't know if you saw him. He was on the broadcast last night. He was there with his kids. His daughter plays hockey, loves playing hockey, wants to be a goalie.
That's awesome.
We need to get her in touch with C-Mace. But like Eli was like, I don't know how to skate. I can't teach her anything, but she loves it. So we come to a lot of games.
Hop on the Metro North.
But I'm sure a lot of Giants fans are going, Eli, what are you doing? You can't root for the Rangers. He goes, but we live in Jersey. We're rooting for the Devils. But, man, he was surrounded by Ranger fans that were all over him. And the Rangers are just they look really good. All these guys, Tarasenko, Kane that they picked up, all the guys they had last year, that team looks like they're playing the best. To me.
So, yeah, Willie, I was going to say, so the Rangers are outscoring the Devils 10-2 after two games, which is insane. And, Derek, one thing that's also surprising, if you want to look at this game when they play next, Alex Lyon for the Florida Panthers is a really fun goalie to watch. Young guy, he's coming in, he's helping them make their run. They look like a fun team to watch, too. And they beat the Boston Bruins. They've evened the series.
And? Patrice Bergeron, who is heart and soul, out for the next two games in Florida. So Alex Lyon is kind of like the out-of-nowhere goalie that nobody knew much about. He hadn't played very much. He gave them a big lift down the stretch, and he got the win in Boston in game two. So it's like the team has rallied around him. They've got Sergei Bobrovsky as their other goalie, $10 million a year.
Ooh.
But he's been there for several years. He hasn't played real well. So they've gone with this underdog number three goalie to start the year, minor leaguer for a lot of his career. You just never know what's going to happen. That's a good one to watch. Florida, remember, last year was the President's Trophy winner. They had more points than anybody. They got their clocks cleaned in the first round by Tampa. This year, barely get in the last couple of days. And here they are, even with the Bruins going back home. So that's a game to keep your eye on tonight. You got Dallas and Minnesota. No surprise, Joe Pavelski did not travel, will not play in the Stars, Wild. I'd be surprised to see him in the rest of the series there, but he didn't make the road trip.
He was on the receiving end of that tough Dumba hit in game one.
Yep, and then you've got the Islanders going home. They'll be angry. They thought they got ripped off in game two. That place will be going nuts.
I thought they got ripped off in game two.
And it'll be the first playoff game in their new building that they built on Long Island. And then the Kings host Edmonton after that split. That been two really tight games in Edmonton. We'll see what happens at game three. Nick, have you seen anything on Fiala? Is he back in there tonight?
I haven't seen anything one way or the other yet. No, but one other thing I thought was interesting, Willie, was before most game twos were final, the away teams had a record of 7-3. Mm. Now the record is down the middle and it's 8-8. So you have a deadlocked home and away record right now. It's going to change, but that beginning was very strange.
And that's kind of what you're asking,
exactly,
Derek. And I do feel like over the years, especially with the salary cap era, even though you got these amazing environments, you'd much rather be at home. And, of course, at home you get the last change. So that's an advantage in and of itself. It's kind of like the last licks for a baseball team. But it seems like it's closer to 50-50 every year. I'd have to go back year by year. It just seems like road teams are still able to find ways to win.
I know I'm for sure going to be watching the Stars Wild game tonight. Mm-hmm. That's been a series that I have been having so much fun watching and following since game one. But coming up next, we will be joined by Kevin Ingram, the voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores. Tennessee-Vanderbilt baseball series going on this weekend. Mm. I have a feeling it's going to be a little bit chippy. Going to be maybe some words exchanged and down at Lindsey Nelson Stadium in Knoxville tonight. So we will get into that with Kevin Ingram coming up next. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, and hey, come out to Bridgestone Arena tomorrow at 2 o'clock for the Nashville Predators open house. The open house will include tours of the Predators locker room, the Lexus Lounge, the team store, and the chance to shoot on net to win two lower-level full-season tickets for next season. Get more details at nashvillepredators.com/openhouse, 1025-1063, the game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game in the Game Nashville app. Joining us now is Kevin Ingram, voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores. Kevin, appreciate you for joining us. Big series this weekend on the road in Knoxville for the Vandy baseball team. And I always look at kind of mid-April being the line of demarcation. Okay, now things are really heating up. You have a good sample size of conference play. And so far, since the mid-April point, Vanderbilt's season has looked a lot better and a lot more optimistic than Tennessee's has. But this doesn't make this series any less important. So what do you think are kind of the keys for Vanderbilt as they go on the road this weekend, taking on a pretty talented Tennessee team?
Yeah, I think you look at the records and what these teams have done. And by the way, thanks a lot for having me. Really appreciate it. Vanderbilt's gone 13-2. Tennessee has gone 5-10 in SEC play. But I think you throw a lot of that out. Anything can happen in these rivalry series. You know Tennessee's going to be extra cranked up with Vanderbilt coming in, and there'll be big crowds, and they'll be loud and rowdy, so it'll be a fun atmosphere over in Knoxville. But yeah, I think for this Vanderbilt team, really a big key is the health of the pitching. We've seen each of the first two game starters miss a little time here in recent weeks. Carter Holton missed his start against Missouri 2 weeks ago, came back last Saturday, and was not very effective in the two-thirds of an inning that he pitched. He didn't make it through the first, and Tim Corbin pretty quickly went to the bullpen, and then those guys did a great job. And Hunter Owen, he was sat down last weekend, and not sure of his status for this week. Devin Futrella has been able to make all of his starts in that Sunday role, and he's been terrific. But, you know, I think the health of the starting pitching for Vanderbilt, I think that's where a lot of it starts for this series. But, gosh, the Commodore pitching has been so good, whether it's been the starters or the guys out of the bullpen. I mean, there are several arms out of that pen last weekend that really saved the day in that series against South Carolina. But I know the formula Vanderbilt hopes for, is, and especially Scott Brown and Tim Corbin, is that you know, those Friday and Saturday starters will be able to go deep into games and give you a good chance to, you know, not use as much of your bullpen for as long and have a good chance to win.
Well, it's always, Kevin, to have these great in-state sort of in-state rivalries, whether it's UT Vandy, you know, Lipscomb, Belmont, stuff like that. But has it become a big rivalry in regards to the SEC?
I think it has. I mean, there's some really good baseball rivalries around the Southeastern Conference. And for Vanderbilt, those rivals have kind of, you know, they've changed some over the years. Florida, to me, has been really one mainstay for Vanderbilt in terms of baseball rivalries. That one's been really good over the years between the Commodores and the Gators, and both have won big and won national championships and all those things. This Vanderbilt and Tennessee rivalry has taken on certainly a different feel over the last few seasons that Tony Vitello has been at Tennessee. He's done a terrific job there, got him to the College World Series 2 years ago, and gosh, they had one of the best teams in the country last year, and before bowing out in the Super Regional against Notre Dame. But Tennessee came into Nashville last year and played great and got the sweep, and that was really big. Vanderbilt won 2 out of 3 when they played over in Knoxville 2 seasons ago in 2021. But yeah, it definitely has taken on a different feel, and I think that's good for the state, good for college baseball. It's a lot of fun when these two teams get together, and they're old in-state rivals, and anytime they play in any sport, it's always a lot of fun. So yeah, I think it has become one of the best rivalries in the conference, and again, it's always a great rivalry in any sport, but the baseball part of it has definitely ramped up in the last few years.
And Kevin, one of the things I think you'll agree that makes it even more spicy, you know, just besides the fact that it's Vanderbilt, Tennessee, is, you know, they kind of go at it a little different, right? Tennessee's style is a little different than Vanderbilt's. We've heard about a little less about it from Tennessee's end this year, but there's no question that I think if they get it rolling this weekend, you're going to see some of that emotion that Tennessee kind of plays with. Vanderbilt's a little bit more even-keeled, although, you know, Enrique Bradfield's a real spirited player. You know, he shows emotion out there. But you know what I'm saying, the contrasting styles, yeah. The rivalry, it's different. It's beyond just the fact that it's Vanderbilt and Tennessee.
Yeah, well, I totally agree. And I think some of that is by design for Tennessee under Tony Vitello. I think they sort of like being different from what Vanderbilt does. You know, Vanderbilt's very buttoned up and I don't know, I don't want to say militaristic, but it's, you know, it has definitely that very buttoned up feel to it, the way Tim Corbin has gone about running his program over the years, and that served him well. He's been to Omaha 5 times and won 2 national championships and 2 runners-up. But you know, Tennessee, it's a much looser, more freewheeling style, and you know, we saw it all last year when they had that. Gosh, I mean, they had such a great season last year, and just always very boisterous and loud, and the hats and, you know, fur coats and all that stuff, you know, when they hit home runs. You don't see a lot of that over in Vanderbilt's dugout, but that is not to say the Vanderbilt guys don't get fired up, because you're exactly right. Enrique Bradfield shows a lot of emotion, as do a lot of these guys. You get the plate stomp after home runs, and, you know, they get fired up for their teammates, but it is a different style, a different feel for these two programs, and that's not to say one is right and one is wrong. It's just different ways of going about it. There are a lot of ways to win games, and both these teams have been very successful, especially in the last few seasons.
It makes for great theater. There's no question about it. And so, Kevin, you mentioned something at the beginning that I think a casual fan, let's just say you're a Tennessee fan or a Vanderbilt fan, and it's around this time of the year that you start focusing in on the college baseball season. You look at Tennessee's record at 5-10, and you're saying, "Well, what's going on? What's wrong with them? They were undefeated, or what? You know, they were really the story of college baseball early, but this is their 4th straight series against a top 5 team. That's how good the SEC teams are. And as you know, Kevin, you don't play everybody, so they have got a very unbalanced, tough strength of schedule, and it's hurt them here in the last few weeks. But do not sleep on the talent of that team.
No doubt. I fully expect Tennessee to play really well in this series this weekend. But yeah, you look back at who all they played. They played at Arkansas last weekend. They were ranked number 5. They played Florida at home a couple weekends back. They were ranked number 2. They won 1 out of 3 in that series, won 1 out of 3 at LSU back at the end of March and in early April. They played Texas A&M, which is a really good team. You know, they ranked number 12, and Tennessee swept them. They lost all 3 against Missouri in the opening series to SEC play. So it has been really uneven. But gosh, I mean, the weekend series have just been so difficult for Vanderbilt. It's sort of been the other way around. And no knock on Ole Miss or Mississippi State or Missouri, but or Georgia. Those were the first 4 series for Vanderbilt, and the Commodores in those games went 11-1. They swept the first 3 weekends and won 2 out of 3 against Georgia. And or 2 out of 3 against Missouri, I should say. and you know, just got off to a great start. And, man, you start stacking those wins, and regardless of what's in the second half of your schedule, you're in really good shape. But Vanderbilt, it feels like Vanderbilt's schedule sort of going the other way. It's ramping up as we get deeper into conference play. You had, you know, South Carolina come in last weekend. They were ranked number 6. You got Tennessee this weekend on the road, which is going to be really tough. You've still got to play at Florida. You got to play at Alabama. You got Kentucky and Arkansas at home. Both those teams have been ranked in the top 10. So different looks to the schedule, but really difficult all the way around for both teams. When you get to the end of that 30-game grind, you definitely feel it, and you're going to play some good teams along the way.
Yeah, so keep an eye on that if you've been following it. We were just having a discussion about the NHL playoffs and how home ice advantage so far, and really the last few years, especially under the salary cap, it's maybe not as big as you would think. But in SEC baseball, if you take a look, there is a big home field advantage. I think, look, when you go to Arkansas, you're lucky to survive out there. At LSU, in Gainesville, I mean, there are hostile atmospheres, big crowds. Vanderbilt obviously plays very well at home. Tennessee is 21-4 at home, 1-9 on the road. So if you think you're just going to roll into Knoxville, that atmosphere is going to be hostile.
Yeah, it really is. You know, and that ballpark over in Knoxville is really small. I mean, just the field itself, it feels like every fly ball has a chance to be a home run. Even calling games over there, it's almost like you have to adjust your way of thinking. Especially, I've watched so many games at Hawkins Field, and you see the, you know, ball flight. You sort of know where it's going to land. In Tennessee, every fly ball feels like it has a chance to land in the bleachers or go over the fence. But yeah, that crowd's going to be cranked up. I mean, you know, they're going to just be ready to roll this weekend. But gosh, you see a little bit of everything in some of these home ballparks. I mean, Arkansas, Vanderbilt had some wildlife to deal with in the stands when they were down there last year. I think there's like a squirrel or a possum.
Like actual wildlife. Yeah.
Yeah, yes, actual wildlife. Vanderbilt had a squirrel in the stands at Hawkins Field a couple weeks ago. That was interesting. It made its way off the foul screen and up the steps and down in front of the booth, and then I don't know where it went after that. But yeah, you see a little bit of everything. We went to Florida a couple years ago. And, of course, Vanderbilt has Enrique Bradfield, who, if he gets on first base, there's a good chance he's going to be standing on third base pretty soon. And Florida put about 1 million gallons of water over by first base to try to slow him down. You know, they have the swamp where they play football. They have the swamp over by first base, too. But yeah, you see a little bit of everything. I mean, Willie, you know, you play in this league. I mean, it's really entertaining, some of the stuff you see around the Southeastern Conference. They love their baseball like everything else.
I, as an LSU fan, I know and love the rally possum very, very well.
Oh, my gosh.
Talk about wildlife. Last one for you, Kevin. Kevin Ingram is with us. We've been talking about the S2 cognition test and how a lot of NFL teams have utilized it to evaluate quarterbacks. But it's something that Tim Corbin in the Vanderbilt baseball program has used for the last several years. What do you know about the S2 cognition test? How has Tim Corbin been able to use it with the baseball team? And how reliable do you think it is in evaluating the potential of an athlete?
And does he have the announcers take the S2 test, Kevin, just to see if you have the cognitive skills to get the job done?
If I still have a job, then they probably haven't made me take the test.
But they are pretty high tech over there, aren't they? They've got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, they really are. I don't know that I can. I don't know that I'm probably the right one to ask about that particular test. But they are very high tech in just the way they go about things, and they're very cutting edge. You know, for Tim Corbin being an old school sort of guy, he definitely has new school ways of thinking and going about baseball. Whether it's all the work they do in the pitching lab, where they use lots of video work, and you know, same thing with the hitters. It is. It's really advanced, and it's really interesting to talk to those guys and see how they go about it. You know, whether it's Tim Corbin or it's Scott Brown, the pitching coach, or Mike Baxter, who's an outstanding hitting coach. Tyler Shoemaker works with the catchers, and all those guys. You talk to them, and it's just fascinating to hear them talk about how they go about trying to teach these guys the game, and just trying to break down what all they're doing and try to figure out ways to make them better. But yeah, it's a high tech approach. With still a lot of old school sort of ways of teaching baseball. And I think it's interesting, too, just to watch teams take batting practice. And I was thinking about this last week when South Carolina was here. The way South Carolina does their BP and the way Vanderbilt does theirs are completely different. It's more of a professional type approach for South Carolina, where, you know, a few guys come in and hit, and you got a bunch of dudes hanging out in the outfield. Vanderbilt, there's never any wasted motion. You got, you know, corpses is hitting ground balls, and you got machines working, you know, throwing pop-ups, and, you know, guys practice bunting, and they bring the ball around and drop it in the basket. It's very interesting to watch different approaches for different teams,
But it's like we were talking about with Vanderbilt and Tennessee earlier. Different ways of winning games, and that's not to say there's one way that's right or wrong.
Kevin Ingram, voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores, appreciate you for joining us. As always, we'll chat soon.
Hey, anytime. Thanks a lot. Y'all have a great weekend.
All right, thanks, Kevin. You too. Coming up next, it's time for D-Mace to talk that talk.
You know it.
There's some interesting stuff happening in Brooklyn last night.
Caroline Willie D-Mace. Very interesting. 102.5, 106.3, the game.
There are some people, the Lakers are making that run. They get it to 14. You and LeBron have that exchange. There are people out there that say maybe you shouldn't do that with one of the better players in the game. Well, I guess what were you thinking?
I don't care. He's old. You know what I mean? I was waiting for that. I was expecting him to do that game four, game five. He wanted to say something when I got my fourth foul. He should have been saying that earlier on. But, you know, I poke bears. I don't respect no one until they come and give me 40. I pride myself on, you know, what I do is defense and taking on any challenge that's on the board.
Those Memphis Grizzlies, Dylan Brooks, after game two. Lakers take game one.
Yes.
Grizzlies take game two. It got a little chippy between Dylan Brooks and LeBron James. That was his response post-game. D-Mace. The official Derek Mason, Dylan Brooks rebuttal ahead of Game 3 tomorrow night.
I mean, I love it. It's going to make for a very entertaining third game, which is at the Crypto.com arena there.
Which, can I say, that is a ridiculous name for an arena.
I know.
That is so dumb.
I know.
So weird.
But please continue.
It went from the Forum to the Staple.
Staples was iconic.
The Crypto.com the arena. But it's going to make for an entertaining game. I love it when Dylan Brooks says, I like poking bears. It's like, okay, you poke one.
You poked one.
Now let's see what happens. But it's good for basketball. It's he's made himself out to be the villain, like the sort of like Lance Stevens, Draymond Green, you know, some of these guys that like to be agitators. But, you know, Dylan Brooks can back it up. I mean, he's not a great player. He's a good player. He plays a significant role on the Memphis team. So when he says something like that, you just can't wait to see what LeBron James' response will be through his play. Not necessarily through his words, because LeBron's not going to say anything. Maybe after the game, if they win, yes, which I believe they will win. But by his play, how aggressive will LeBron James be? Because this past game, LeBron James starting out, he wasn't as aggressive. I think he was leaning more so on Anthony Davis to get himself established, Austin Reeves, those guys to get themselves established, and then all of a sudden Batman will swoop in once the sign goes up. You know, here I come to save the day, but it didn't happen because they dug themselves too much of a hole. I look for the third game to be sort of back and forth again, but I believe the Lakers pull it out. You know, Memphis is going to need Ja Morant eventually before this series ends. And even when he come back, you don't know how much of Ja Morant will be Ja Morant on the court with that hand injury. So that's going to be an intriguing series moving forward. Philly, Brooklyn last night.
Yeah, what happened? I didn't see much until I actually flipped it on right after Harden was ejected. Yes. So I didn't see all of the things that led up to it, but man,
It got very chippy. Claxton, who's the Nets center, young center, pretty good player, doesn't have much of an offensive game. Defensive game is off the charts, but he's a young player. There must have been some back and forth with Joel Embiid. He ends up on, you know, offensive side of the floor, ends up getting an alley-oop, dunks it on Joel. Joel falls down. He steps over Joel.
Which is a technical.
But Joel then purposely, not, you know, inadvertently, purposely kicked the guy close to that area you don't want to kick. Exactly.
Between the legs.
He kicks him. And it was done deliberately. And they go back and they're trying to figure out, is it going to be a flagrant one, a flagrant two? Because a flagrant two means you're out of the game. They called it a flagrant one. They said he kicked him, but he didn't kick him in that vital part. What do you mean he kicked you?
He meant to kick you.
Exactly. He meant to kick you. So that should have been that was egregious. He should have been thrown out of the game.
Which I think is so unfair. And compare that to the Draymond Green, exactly, DeMontis Sabonis situation. DeMontis Sabonis was holding on to Draymond Green's foot. Mm-hmm. Did he land with a little bit more force than necessary? Probably. Absolutely. Neither is innocent. But I would say what Draymond Green, yes, did was much less egregious,
exactly,
than what happened last night with Joel Embiid.
Absolutely. Play that clip on Joel Embiid.
He'll come the other way. Mikal Bridges. Oh, my goodness. Oh, and Claxton, and down goes both of the players.
It looked like, did Embiid trip Claxton? Because it looked like he was looking over him.
What a pass here from Bridges to Claxton. Look at the stare down. It's kind of hard to tell there. There's the finish. And there's the stare down and the step over.
Ooh.
Looked like one of the Rockettes with that kick.
And that.
Leave it to Kevin Harlan. He's always got the right thing.
That was, and subsequently after that, that was the kick. So they didn't eject Joel Embiid, but then they end up ejecting Harding because he made a basketball move.
Yeah, this was after.
And he hit the guy with his hands. Not on purpose, inadvertently. He hit the guy.
Near the sensitive area. But
more so in the stomach region.
It was like his gut.
Yeah, lower part. Yeah.
I don't think it was above his waistband on his shorts.
Exactly. And they threw him out of the game. So they called that a flagrant too. So there's just been a lot of things going on. I mean, from player one to player, 8, 9, 10, Philly's a better team. Philly will win this series. Philly is up, I think, 2-0 or 3-0. They're up 3-0. So that's – Philly's going to sweep that series. Sac and Golden State, good game last night. High-scoring game. Even without Draymond Green, the Splash Brothers came out and played extremely well. And then they got some extra play by Mooney, who gave them 20 rebounds. I think he had close to double-digit points, their mm-hmm. center. So he played a big role because of Draymond Green not there last night. That's going to be an intriguing series. I still pick Sac to win with Monk and De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis. That's a good team, the highest-scoring team in the NBA with the NBA's, coach of the year. And Brown. So that's going to be an intriguing scene. I picked Sac to win. Phoenix won last night. Big game by Durant. Bigger game by I'm forgetting his name now.
Booker?
Devin Booker.
45.
He had 45 last night. But the Clippers were without, obviously, Paul George. But then Kawhi Leonard didn't play either. And they still only lost by a couple of points.
Pretty impressive.
But the big game, the games tonight, Boston, Atlanta, Cleveland, New York.
Cleveland.
Denver,
come on,
Minnesota.
Cavs. We got the 80s fight song going
on
here.
There we go. So that'll be a good game. Cleveland and New York would be a good game, a good series. But I'm waiting Saturday.
And
Saturday.
Any playoff game at Madison Square Garden with the Knicks. They haven't played too many playoff games the last. It's going to be rocking. With the organ, it's the best organ in sports. Right
Always.
Up there.
Our NBA insider, Derek Mason, that's going to do it for us today. When we are back Monday at 11 a.m., it will be draft week, draft week, draft week, draft week. Stillman and Company is up next.
Be love and love on somebody. Peace.
Have a great day, guys. Enjoy the sunshine.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.